Hey everyone, Gary D'Amato with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, sports columnist, and with Matt Velasquez, covers the Bucks for the Journal Sentinel, JS Online. We're here to talk about Game 6 of the playoffs coming up in a few hours here. Matt, Bucks are in a 3-2 hole. This could be the last game ever at the Bradley Center unless they win, obviously. So what are your impressions of how the series has gone so far, Matt, and what do you expect to see tonight?
You know, well, it could be the last game at the Bradley Center, whether they win or lose tonight, because they could win and then they go on to game 7 and that'll be in Boston. But if they lose that one, then this would be the last game at the Bradley Center.
Right.
That's still a possibility, that we could be seeing some history. Obviously, there's also the possibility they win out and then move on to the next round. We got a couple more games, here in Milwaukee. But just the impression so far of the series is, you know, the old saying goes that, bench players and role players tend to play better at home than they do on the road, and that's held true in every game of this series so far. You know, the Bucks role players didn't perform as well in games 1 and 2 at TD Garden, even though the Bucks did have plenty of opportunities to win game 1, and they kind of got run off the floor in game 2. Those support players didn't really bring it. And then games 3 and 4, we saw a lot of those guys having great games. Obviously, Thon Maker was a revelation. He returned to playoff Thon form, as we saw last year. You know, Matthew Dellavedova brought something off the bench. Jabari Parker was a total 180 from what he had been in games 1 and 2. Tony Snell was making some shots. You know, the Bucks were getting all kinds of contributions outside of just Giannis Antetokounmpo and Chris Middleton. And then game 5, you know, the Bucks finally have a game where they're not shooting well. Prior to game 5, they'd shot, you know, in the 50s in terms of their percentage overall from the field during the first four games, including game 2 when they lost, it almost shot 60%, which is mind-boggling. But then you get game 5 where their shooting cools off. It's a kind of a rock fight for a lot of it. The Bucks trail for a lot of it, and they get close but can't get over the hump, and we've seen that plenty of times this season, considering they, you know, got behind by double digits in more than 50% of their games. So we've definitely seen this before. And, you know, now we're heading into game 6 where the Bucks, you know, they can take some solace in the fact that they're at home. Maybe they can get those contributions off the bench and from their role players that they hadn't been getting in Boston. You know, and we'll have to see how Boston responds. You know, after they got Marcus Smart back in game 5, he provided an emotional boost and a very tangible boost on the court with, you know, a couple, like, I think it was 3 blocks, a steal, a bunch of, you know, hustle plays. And maybe now, do they come down from that? Do they build from that? It's hard to tell heading into game 6.
What's the theory on why role players, bench players don't perform as well on the road? Is it totally crowd related, or, you know, is it just sort of a coincidence, or is there actually some reasoning behind why we've seen, you know, the Bucks, especially, and it's glaring in this series that the Bucks, the guys coming off the bench have played much better at home than they have on the road. What are the theories behind that, Matt?
I think it's just a comfort level. You know, obviously you're used to your home court. You know where your spots are. You know what you need to do. The crowd plays into that. You feel like you're getting that support when you do things. You know, people are responding. You know, part of it's just kind of weird. Like, it's just kind of, you know, something that happens. Why do, you know, home teams win more than road teams? You know, it's just because they're generally more comfortable at home. They have a better feel for where they need to be. And you know, you have that support, and there you go. But it is kind of strange. And I think it also happens with, you know, just the way that the game kind of plays with your emotions when you're at home against, you know, versus being on the road. You know, maybe you see a little bit of that with young players too, where, you know, going into an intense, tough atmosphere, you know, sometimes you might tighten up, or you might, you know, get thrown off by, okay, maybe you make a bad play or you get dunked on or something like that, and the crowd's all on you and your mind's starting to go 100 different places. And, you know, I think sometimes too, it just has to do with, you know, people have said in the past that the Bradley Center is a hard place to shoot. I remember hearing stories about, you know, I think it was like Larry Bird would say, like, oh, he just come out there and get extra shots up in the Bradley Center because of just the depth perception was different. And every arena is a little bit different, but you're used to your home home arena, you know kind of what the shot looks like when you're putting it up. So that could play into it as well, but generally, I mean, that has no effect over, you know, certain types of, hustle plays or communicate. I mean, maybe it affects your communication on defense, maybe with the volume, where, how things are, but basically I can't really explain it, Gary. I can just try and come up with a bunch of different theories, but it's just something that you see that happens, and it's consistent enough that people always bring it up.
Yeah, and it's definitely consistent enough. I mean, it's definitely been evident in this series in particular. But, you know, Matt, going back to game five, I still say the Bucks win that game. I don't know. I can't remember what they shot in the first half. It might have been 29%. But it seemed like for a while it seemed like they had a stretch where they went about 2 for 18, it seemed like. And all I have to do is make a few more shots in that first half and it's a totally different game. I mean, yeah, they didn't play quite as well and the bench didn't play quite as well as they had in Milwaukee, but it's a game that was winnable, I thought, if they'd made a few more shots. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I think they went on a 1-for-12 stretch at the end of the first quarter that gave Boston a chance to seize the lead. Didn't get up to double digits like it had in games 1 and 2 by the end of the first quarter, but I got to 8, which is close enough. You know, and Joe Prunty mentioned that he thought that there was a lot of over dribbling, guys not trusting the pass, things of that nature that were going on. There were times where I know in the second quarter they were really trying to go after Shane Larkin so they would get Chris Middleton isolated on him and try to let him go to work. And that generally worked. But outside of that, once they tried to go away from that, the offense didn't really work right. Giannis sat out for almost, you know, 5 minutes to start the second quarter after sitting out the end of the first quarter, which, you know, anytime he's out isn't a great situation for the Bucks. And then he played the final 31 minutes and 40 seconds of the game straight through the second quarter, you know, and then all the second half. So, you know, he seemed like, obviously they were cutting off the lane from him, making him, you know, forcing him to be a passer, which he did fairly well. He set up his teammates for 20 potential assists and only got 9 because they just couldn't knock down their shots. You know, and some of those were wide open looks. I know Shabazz Muhammad had a wide open one from the corner. Tony Snell had at least one wide open one from the corner. You know, Snell was 0 for 5 on threes, and he's 0 for 9 on threes in Boston, which is just kind of weird for a 40% shooter overall. And somebody who didn't struggle shooting there in the regular season. He was, I think, 4 for 7 in Boston. So it's just kind of a weird coincidence that it's happened like that in the playoffs, especially considering that he's gotten good looks overall. But yeah, I mean, I think if they made 2 more shots, it would have bumped them up to like 39% shooting for the game, which isn't great. But, you know, if those 2 shots were threes, that's 6 more points. And obviously the final margin was 5. And of course, like, you know, if you make a shot, that affects the flow of the game in terms of, you know, if they got a rebound and all these different things. You can't say, oh yeah, make 2 more shots, they definitely win. But if you make more shots, you're definitely going to give yourself a better chance of winning. And when you shoot 37%, you're probably not going to win. So if they can just make a couple more shots, if they can get their offense going, I think a lot of that has to do with Giannis getting going. I mean, only 10 shots for him in Game 5 is really low. He's only shot fewer than that twice this season, and one of those was a game that he left in the second quarter with an injury. Yeah, but when he's facilitating for teammates, that's all well and good. But he gets to the line, he converts his shots, and he sucks in the defense, and he just does such a good job of scoring. And when you add in the free throws, his points per possession are really high. So you have to, he has to be more assertive in getting his shots. Even if they're giving him shots he doesn't like, he needs to find a way to turn those looks into better opportunities for himself, because he's the best option for the Bucks if they're going to score. If he's passing, he might, you know, it might be on paper the best play, but then the guy still has to make the shot. And if he's going to be passing, guys need to make shots at a high rate to even equal what he would do if he just kept the ball himself and he put something up. So I'll be interested to see how aggressive he is. He said he knows he needs to be more aggressive tonight. So I'm interested to see how aggressive he is and how that translates, especially given the way that the Celtics have been packing the paint.
You know, the other thing I I thought I noticed, and maybe you could talk about this, Matt, is that, you know, I think Boston, I think Brad Stevens had a shift in sort of strategy. You know, Celtics have been crashing the offensive boards. I think they had 14 offensive rebounds in game 4 in Milwaukee, but it didn't help much because they got blown out. I thought in game 5, they weren't crashing the boards as much on the offensive end. They were getting back, preventing the Bucks from running and getting in transition and making the Bucks play their half court game, which we all know the Bucks aren't nearly as good in their half court offense as they are when they're able to run. Do you expect that to continue in Game 6 and, if necessary, in Game 7?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you look at the offensive rebounds, and the Celtics only had 5 in Game 5, and the Bucks actually had 7, you know. And so they definitely gave themselves extra opportunities. The Bucks have, I mean, you mentioned the strategy the Celtics used. The Bucks have been using that all year. That's been their move. They had the best transition defense in the league, mostly because teams didn't get out into transition against them. They wouldn't crash the boards. They wouldn't go for offensive rebounds unless there was a guy who was already in the paint. Maybe he'd go for it. But then everybody else would get back, and you'd make sure that the other team doesn't get into transition, because, you know, as you've seen from watching the Bucks, they're actually not a great transition defense team when teams do get into transition. They tend to struggle there, and usually, you know, there have been times where they'll get bailed out by Giannis flying in out of nowhere for a chase down block. But they do struggle with their transition defense in general when teams do get into transition, which is why they try and stop teams from even getting to that point. So the Celtics seem to do something very similar. The Bucks are not, as you said, a great half-court team. Obviously, Giannis is a great transition player, great half-court player, but you especially fear him in transition. So if you can limit his opportunities to get out and run, you can set up your defense, you can wall up in the paint, and you can put yourself in a better position to defend him and everybody else. I expect they might do something similar going forward, just because it works so well. And I know that a lot of people have mentioned, oh man, the Bucks got out rebounded by 13. It was this big rebounding margin, blah, 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 in game 5. And honestly, that rebounding margin doesn't matter. Usually rebounding margin doesn't matter anyway. Just because you look at how many shots the Bucks took. They took 18 more shots than the Celtics did in game 5. So of course that's going to lead to, you know, more rebounds for the Celtics, because, you know, you're more likely to get defensive rebounds. Even if you got defensive rebounds at a lower rate, you'd still get most of them. So just that many missed shots, 18 more missed shots means you're giving the Celtics 18 more chances to grab rebounds, you know, than they gave you chances. So that it's not really that big a deal. Obviously, the 7 offensive rebounds for the Bucks off of their 87 misses is decent. It's not great. But the fact that they limited the Celtics to only 5 offensive rebounds is important. If they can continue to do that and also find ways to get out into transition or semi-transition, you know, off of those defensive rebounds, that'll be a big boost in Game 6.
Who in particular would you say has to play better tonight for the Bucks? Who has struggled a little bit? I say Eric Bledsoe. I think Rozier's gotten in his head a little bit. He's had his moments and he's had flashes in the playoffs, but I don't think he's played as well in the playoffs as he did in the last 12, 14 games of the regular season. What do you say about that?
Yeah, I think Bledsoe, I mean, last game, he played 34 minutes. He had just 1 turnover, 3 steals. Those are good numbers.
Yeah.
But he was 5 of 15 from the floor. What he really needs to do is he can take open, in-rhythm, you know, threes when he gets them, catch-and-shoot threes. He's been really good at those over the last few weeks. And then when he can get open lanes one-on-one and drive to the basket, he's very creative with his finishes, and he's good at putting down those layups. But outside of those two things, the catch-and-shoot threes and the layups, he needs to cut out all the mid-range shots from his game, because, you know, he makes a couple of game here and there, but he's also got a bad habit of taking mid-range shots early in the shot clock, you know, with 18, 19, 20 seconds still left. There's a lot better things the Bucks could do with their offense in terms of being efficient. they can do better things than taking that mid-range shot early in the shot clock. I mean, that goes for everybody around the NBA. I mean, that's kind of a no-no for a lot of teams. And that's something that, you know, if he makes it, that's nice, but it's still not the ideal shot that you want to take. Just because you want to give yourself a more efficient, better look at creating something where maybe if you don't take that shot, you can swing the ball around and get the defense out of rotation and you can get a wide open three from a, you know, from a Middleton or a Snell or a Brogdon, something like that, where, you know, that shot, you know, is worth obviously 3 points. It's worth more than a mid-range jumper, and you've worked the defense around, you've tired them out, and you've got a shot that you can live with. And then obviously with a three-pointer, you know, the defense is already scrambling, and maybe you have a better chance of the offensive rebound if it misses. So if he can avoid those mid-range shots, you know, obviously two-for-one type situations at the end of a quarter, maybe you pull up a quick jumper just to give yourself two cracks at having the ball. So I'm not really talking about that type of situation, even though a mid-range jumper in that spot still might not be the best. It's, you can understand that. But if he can just, you know, drive and either get layups or get fouled, or he can just knock down, catch, shoot threes, and play within himself on the offensive end in that way, then that seems like it would help the Bucks. Cause like I said, his three steals and just one turnover, in game five, those are good. Those are things you're going to need. But you also need for him on the defensive end. There were a couple plays, especially in the first half, where he just gave up, where either he, you know, didn't communicate with someone on a switch and that left somebody open and he didn't even try and close out, or he, you know, I know there was one play where Bledsoe was on Horford and Middleton called out to a switch so that, you know, so that Bledsoe wouldn't be stuck guarding Horford in the post. And Middleton runs over to the paint, leaving his guy open in the corner, and Bledsoe was supposed to switch, and Bledsoe was late on that one. You know, and maybe that's on Middleton for not calling it early enough. Maybe that's on Bledsoe, but still, it's not a good look for him because the ball ends up going to the corner, and the guy gets a wide open three. You know, so just staying locked in every possession on defense and limiting his mid-range jumpers, and then, you know, if he can do that, that's more of the Eric Bledsoe that the Bucks are going to need tonight and going forward.
Yeah, definitely. If you want anyone on a team shooting mid-range jumpers, it's going to be Middleton and not Bledsoe for sure.
Definitely.
Game six. I think I see the Bucks winning this game. Maybe a tight game, but I see them winning. And then should that happen, they go back to Boston for a game seven. Bucks haven't won a first-round playoff series, I think, in 17 years. They're in position to do it, but they put themselves in an unenviable position of having to win back-to-back games with the second one on the road. If you were a betting man, Matt, what would you say? Do you think how big a chance do they have to advance to the second round here?
You know, when I initially was going into the series and I made my prediction, I predicted Bucks in seven. So I guess I'm beholden to that. I have I will stick with it. It's still in play. Right now they're 4-point favorites tonight at home. I think that they get a big boost from the crowd. They get a big boost from being at home. Obviously they haven't, you know, that didn't play out that way last year against Toronto. They got into a huge hole in game six and they stormed their way back and made it close in the fourth quarter before falling in a tight game to the Raptors and getting knocked out in game six. I think that they've learned from that experience. I think that, you know, Boston's role players haven't played all that great in Milwaukee. I mean, Rozier's had a couple tough games. Guys off their bench really haven't done all that much. Marcus Morris obviously puts his shots up, but he hasn't gotten as many to fall in Milwaukee. Jaylen Brown has been great. He's been the one guy who's been great basically anywhere they've been, which is impressive for a second-year player. You know, but I think the Bucks can pull this one out tonight. And, you know, like I said, I predicted Bucks in seven, so no road team would have won to that point. So it would take, you know, the first time this series, the Bucks have to win game seven on the road and be the first team to do that. I think they can. I think they've shown in their games in Boston outside of game two. Game one, they had every opportunity to win. But they dug themselves into a big hole early. Game three was the same thing. They eventually had every opportunity to win, but they dug themselves into a hole early. And if they can avoid that, then they can come out with the series win. But it's definitely going to be tough. The Celtics are coming in with a lot of confidence. They've been playing well. They're well coached. They've got Marcus Smart back. They feel like they can build off of what they did in game five. And, you know, they're obviously motivated to close this series out and get moving to the next round. They'll be playing, I think they're playing Saturday no matter what, whether they're playing game seven or they'll be hosting game one against the Sixers. So, you know, they know what their schedule is and they know what they gotta do. The question is, you know, can they come out with the win in Milwaukee? And we'll have to see that in a couple hours.
I'm really looking forward to it, Matt. Looking forward to working with you tonight. Any final thoughts on this game? Or have we covered everything?
Well, I think that, you know, when it comes to the Bucks bench, I'm interested to see if Jabari Parker can continue his hot play of late. I mean, as we mentioned earlier, in passing games one and two, just, you know, he didn't get very many minutes, but part of that was because he really didn't prove that he deserved minutes in the minutes that he played. He played just 25 total in games one and two, scored just 2 points, looked detached on defense, really wasn't providing the hustle necessary for a playoff series. And then he came back and, you know, he voiced his frustrations about playing time and felt that he had earned it. He'd been waiting for years to get into the playoffs and didn't get that playing time. And, he felt that he was on Joe Prunty's bad side, and that's why he wasn't playing. And, he kind of had this very, I'd say fairly impassioned, media session, at least for him. He's kind of usually kind of a quiet, cool customer, but, During that media session, he was more animated than usual. And then he came out and he backed it up. And in game three with a big game where he played great on both ends. He played 30 minutes and knocked out a bunch of shots and locked in on defense. Game four, I think, was his best defensive half because he played a lot in the first half, not so much in the second half, but in the first half he was fantastic on defense. He had 3 blocks and 2 steals in 10 minutes, and he had never had 3 blocks and 2 steals in a whole game before, and he was just affecting things at that end in a way that basically no one had ever seen. And then game five, I mean, he was fine in that game too. I mean, 7-15 from the field, only 2 of 7 on threes, but he was a monster on the boards in the fourth quarter, got 4 offensive rebounds in that quarter alone, to keep the Bucks, going and give them more opportunities. He did everything that he was asked to do. And so if he can continue doing that, tonight in game six, that's a huge boost for the Bucks, knowing that they're going to get, the level of intensity and urgency that he's been bringing on both ends, throughout the game. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, Thon Maker, who, games one and two played 1 minute, and then games three and four, combined had 10 blocks, was a huge spark off the bench, was the biggest emotional boost that the Bucks had. Every time he came in, he was revving up the crowd and making big plays and getting people going, both on the court and in the crowd. So he had a little bit of a tough game in game five. Wasn't able to make his shots. He 0-for-3 on threes, 1-of-5 overall. Was kind of invisible on the boards, which he had been for a lot of the season. Just 2 rebounds in 24 minutes, which isn't great, especially when, he's playing center. And Boston has started to realize how to get around him, throw him in pick and rolls, how to finish over and underneath him, so they don't get their shots blocked. So if he can adjust and find ways to affect, the Celtic shots, either by blocking them or just, making them shoot, way off target in order to avoid the block, along with, just knocking down his open threes and running from rim to rim and providing an outlet for passes and consistently catching the ball and finishing, then he could be another guy who could have a major positive impact for the Bucks to help them get to a game seven.
It is fascinating, the game-to-game adjustments, especially in a playoff series where guys, you know, as Joe Prunty said before the series started, there's no secrets at the end of a, you know, game six or game seven of a playoff series. They know each other so well, and yet they're still making adjustments to try to capitalize on another team's weakness or exploit something or go to one of their strengths. So it's fascinating the way it's gone back and forth that way. Well, Matt, hopefully our next podcast is not going to be a season-ending wrap. Hopefully we've got a couple more of these left before the Bucks call it a season. But I'm looking forward to a good game tonight, and hopefully the Bucks pull one out so we can keep doing this.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see, you know, last game was a little bit chippy, a little bit of a, you know, extracurriculars going on, and it's funny, we asked, you know, the Bucks resident expert on chippiness, Matthew Dellavedova, we asked him about game six, if he expected it to be a little chippy, and he said, oh, you know, when you're playing the same team over and over again, it gets a little physical, gets a little chippy. It's the same case whether you're playing board games with your family, you keep playing the same people over and over, and it's going to get chippy. So, you know, that's what Deli had to say about it, and he would know. Big player of Settlers of Catan with his family, and definitely somebody who likes to rabble rouse a little bit on the court. So I'm interested to see what kind of extracurricular activities we see in the game tonight, you know, especially in an elimination game. And with Marcus Smart, Marcus Morris, Bledsoe, Deli, all those guys in the mix. So it should be fun. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing you and figuring out, you know, what's next. If I need to book a flight to Boston for tomorrow or need to grab a hotel, I'm ready to figure that out.
Well, hopefully nobody throws elbows in the Monopoly game, Matt.
Yeah, seriously.
At least in my family. All right. I guess it's a wrap. Want to take us home?
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening and following along during this series and this season. As always, you can find our work at jsonline.com/bucks. And you can also find the podcast there along with our Audio Boom page. You can subscribe to it on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and basically anywhere you get podcasts. So like Gary said, hopefully we'll have another one that's not a season-ending podcast. But until then, just keep following us on JS Online, and we'll talk to you soon.